Today's discussion, in the spirit of Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones, is the top 10 planning issues for families with multinational interests. Point number one, what are the obstacles when appointing guardians who reside overseas? It is critical to note that if you have family that is overseas and you intend to name your family as the guardians of your minor children, I'm not even sure whether Mick's got children under 18, it would not surprise me, or any of the members of the band, even at their age. But if you have a minor child, you know when you're planning, you must name a guardian to act on their behalf. And your top choice for guardian may, in fact, indeed be non-resident, non-citizens to the U.S. The process is not simple or not uncomplicated. The answer here is first, choose guardians who are local, because in order for the foreign guardians to qualify, a series of steps are necessary. The local guardians, in the meantime, can take your children. We have had clients over the years who were not even U.S., but were green card holders or were working a portion of the time in the U.S. and had children here, and they said, we could care less about your tax issues, we could care less about estate planning. We want to know that if my spouse and I pass away, that our children are heading back to London, or heading back to Paris, or heading back to Rome, wherever it is, and that they're safe and protected. That is not an easy task. But task one is to get local guardians so that the surrogate can effectively appoint them. And those folks, they could be neighbors, dear friends. My wife Rosemary and I have even served in certain capacities to do that as well, lest the children be put into some kind of government-organized care facility until we can clean up the issues related to guardianship. The U.S. is very, very focused on protecting its U.S. citizens who are children, and very focused on protecting its children who are not U.S. citizens. And so once they are in the country and they're here under some form of legal residency, whether they're foreigners coming in or U.S. children that are here, the next real questions are, how do we allow these children to leave the country? And that is a process even for vacation. So we've had a couple who passed away, sadly, and the children were left with the grandparents, and the grandparents wanted to make a trip to Italy. To have the passport valid and to have the parent, the appointed guardians, oversee that was and allow the children to leave the country, the U.S. authorities believe that that child is officially leaving, and that the grandparents are taking them back to their, Nona is taking them back to Italy. So the steps are significant. Please communicate with us. If you're in that situation or you know somebody, of course, we've already planned for each of you on the call to handle, how to handle that. But it starts, number one, with choosing local guardians in the U.S., and number two, being clear about the relationship of the foreign guardians and what your intentions are. Should the guardians move here? Should the children move overseas? And laying out where the issues and the work that needs to be done. Make sure your children's passports are constantly updated. It is no mistake that the U.S. government has those renewed every 5 years, as opposed to a federal, an adult on this federal rule, where it's 10 years. Understand that even if you're traveling overseas, the expiration period for your passport must be significantly beyond the time you're slated to return. Do not miss this issue. So with your children and passports, it's not, I'm leaving August 15th and I'm coming back September 1 and September 10th, the passport expires. The answer is, from the U.S. standpoint, that passport has to expire months beyond that date. So always keep the children's passports current and updated. Number two, what should I know about income taxes when I begin a career in a new country? Not simple work. Historically, this has been the purview of the formerly Big Eight accounting firms, now Big Four with consolidation. We have built a practice in this office to handle those matters because so many of our clients are spending time overseas, whether it's retiring. Our daughter just finished graduate school in Paris. She'd love for us to spend 3 months in Paris and address the Olympics and just enjoy the countryside. Maybe sometime that'll be the case. But it is essential to know that there are certain benefits you can earn, or you can exclude maximum income up to $105,000, for example, in 2019. But that election must be on Form 255, 25, 55, and attached to the return. If the election is made, you cannot claim on your tax return that foreign taxes have been paid. In lieu of the deduction, you can claim a foreign tax credit. But you have to compare the tax using the exclusion that we've stated above of 105.9 with the tax using the foreign tax against using the foreign tax credit and choose whichever gives you the lower tax rate. Qualifying for the foreign earned income exclusion is also not simple. You must be a citizen of the U.S. or a U.S. resident alien who is in a country that has a tax treaty with the U.S. So if we were to go to France, we have a tax treaty with France. If we're a foreign resident, which of course we're U.S. citizens, but if we're a foreign resident, we must be a bona fide resident of the foreign country for an uninterrupted period of one full year. So that's a calendar, one full tax year. That's a calendar year from January to December, or have to have the physical presence test so that we are on foreign soil for a period of 330 full days, which do not have to be consecutive, but still 330 full days in any 12-month period. And we can be a resident or transient date. Additional time to file. If you're going to file this and you're living abroad, you get an automatic extension until June 15th, but you get an additional 4 months if you file an extension to June by June 15th for 4 months beyond that date. If it's the foreign tax credit versus the exclusion, you must file Form 1116 to compute the credit. The credit is based on your tax liability multiplied by the fraction of foreign taxable income over your total taxable income. So first you have to establish what the tax liability is, and you multiply the fraction of your foreign income over your total income. So essential pieces to know and to consider before you are moving overseas. Your corporation, if it's or business, may already have planned and thought this through, but if you reach out to us, we will give you the backup and translate this into plain English, and also confirm that the work that's done by one of the other firms, large firms, is correct, or we can do all the work for you ourselves. What is a covered expatriate? Number three, and why should you avoid being classified by one? So the purpose of the covered expatriate fact pattern is that you may be willing and seek to renounce your citizenship or your permanent residence in the U.S., and we saw this happen before. Facebook senior brass accepted the Facebook going public, and they were going to have that significant monetization of their shares. So they renounced their residency in the U.S. There are others that renounced their citizenship. It is rare to see U.S.-born with U.S. family members renouncing citizenship, because they have so many rich and complete connections in the U.S. And it also means that they have to be prepared to not just renounce their citizenship, but to have another place that they're calling home. And that must be their permanent residency. And there have been those who've renounced to Canada or renounced to certain Dutch islands that have connections and allow you still to have some, incredibly modest, but some access back to the U.S. Why would you renounce your citizenship? Well, of course, the purpose of renouncing is to avoid paying the U.S. tax if you're going to have a significant gain or your income is so significant year in and year out that you need to consider a jurisdiction outside the U.S. that would be a lower authority. It is a material change in your lives and needs to be thought through very closely. We have frequently have had green card holders reach out to us and say, do an analysis of living in the U.S., in the Northeast, do an analysis of living in Florida where you have no state income tax, do an analysis for living in Puerto Rico if you don't have any state or federal tax based on the business arrangement, do an analysis if we were to give it up altogether and go to Switzerland or a tax authority that has no tax in that state either. The issues are important to review each step. But if you are a covered expatriate, and this is the one that typically after that, that means that you have to pay an exit tax before you go. So a covered expatriate is one who meets any one of the following three requirements. The expatriate's average annual income, net income for a period of 5 tax years, ending on the day before relinquishing citizenship, is greater than $168,000 for those expatriating in 2019. So if you are relinquishing your citizenship, the taxes, your income, has, if it's over $168,000, you're a covered expat. If you have a net worth, number two, that is at least $2 million on the date of the expatriation, or if you failed as a taxpayer and you were a green card holder to certify that you have paid your taxes in the 5 preceding years or failed to submit evidence of compliance with the IRS, on Form 8854 used for the certification. If you don't reach any of those three, you're not liable for the exit tax. If you meet any of these three, you're liable for the exit tax. To file, it will cost you $2,350 after you, and that fee is a 422% increase since 2015. It is the highest fee in the world to surrender your green card and pay any exit tax. The way the exit tax is calculated is by deeming all of your assets as being sold on the day before you expatriate. So it's marking these assets to market, deeming it to be a sale. And then you would be taxed on the associated capital gain, which is taxed at a rate as high as 23%. The amount of $725,000, the first $725,000 is excluded from this mark-to-market gain. So if you had $1 million of gains, you'd pay 23% on the last $275,000. And by the way, this includes your IRA. So that one is material as opposed to many of you who may work overseas on section number 2 in our bullets, but number 3 is a very frequent question for people who are doing incredibly well here but are only here in a short period of time and have always desired to go back to the country of their origin or another one. And their children are starting to grow and they want no more time in the U.S. so that they can put roots back in their original country. Please come to us because some of these issues also relate to how many years you're in the U.S. So if you're maintaining a residence here for 8 of the last 15 years, you automatically are now in the universe of addressing the covered expatriate rules. Okay, number 4, what are the U.S. reporting requirements in connection with international assets and penalties for failing to satisfy them? So the failure to notify the U.S. about an inheritance received from a non-resident or certain amounts held in a different country can result in significant monetary and criminal penalties. The penalties can be 30% of the value of the gift. And so, yes, foreign individuals passing assets to U.S. residents can avoid the inheritance or the estate tax in the U.S. and the gift tax. But the U.S. government says, fine, you've gotten a gift from a foreigner, no tax on the inbound gift. We're happy to have it in the U.S. But now we're going to track it, and any earnings on that gift, we want to know about it, and so you're going to have to report it. And all too often people say, well, I got a gift from my father in France, and I'm going to just leave it in a French bank account and only pay French tax. Well, that sounds wonderful, except the U.S. government says, au contraire, those assets now in France, Mr. Jagger, are actually assets that you own, and any earnings on that as a U.S. resident are subject to U.S. tax, less any credits you get with the French government for the treaty that we have with them. So essential here is you must report the receipt of the gift. Your failure to report the receipt of the gift can result in a penalty of 30% of that. So a $1 million gift could cost you $300,000 in your failure to comply. We have done some of our best work in international matters in litigating and negotiating those matters. I must tell you, it is not child's play. Just file on time. Come to us if you're expecting a gift, number one. Number two is if the gifts are coming, we love the idea of having a trust set up stateside to gently provide the soft landing for that gift that's coming outside from outside the U.S. Now it's in an insulated vehicle, number one, and number two, it will pass through your lifetime free of tax and down to your children free of tax. Please take full advantage of that when inbound gifts are coming and that are excluding estate and gift tax from the overseas donor. Number five, what are the gift and estate tax concerns when you're married to a non-citizen? So you all know that when you pass away as a couple who are both U.S. citizens, both of you can pass the assets to the surviving spouse pursuant to the unlimited marital deduction, meaning if I pass away, my wife Rosemary can receive all of our assets without any taxation. It is a wonderful gift that President Ronald Reagan deployed in the early 80s, saying surviving spouses shouldn't pay the tax. However, part two to that is that's fine because Rosemary is a U.S. citizen. It's not that they're being incredibly generous. They're just being patient. On Rose's passing, they know that Rose's estate will be subject to estate tax. So the answer here is very, very clearly that they will receive that tax when she passes away. If Rose were not a U.S. citizen and just a green card holder, Rose could take that money, hop on the next jet overseas, replant herself, and not have to pay any exit tax because she's below an exemption. And when she passes away, there would be no federal estate tax. So the U.S. government says, we don't trust you, Rose. If you are a non-citizen or a green card holder, you're going to pay the tax on your husband's death. So the way around that is to create a certain trust called a qualified domestic trust. And the purpose of the trust is to say that on the passing of John, the assets remain in trust for Rose. She can go back to the country of her origin, but these assets remain on U.S. soil. And then when Rose passes away, they'd be subject to tax. So we avoid the tax that the non-citizen surviving spouse would otherwise pay by putting it into this qualified domestic trust. If you are married to or you have friends, because we've already done all your planning on this call, but if you have friends that are non-citizens or are non-residents and they're married to a U.S. citizen, it is essential that you do them a favor and remind them of the importance of getting wills done in the U.S. to address the fact that the non-citizen spouse is not protected. Number six, how do gift and estate taxes affect the non-resident aliens? So now we have groups of people who come here for short periods of time, and Florida is one place they go, New York is another place, And the answer here is, an important piece to keep in mind is that assets that are not in the U.S. are not subject to tax. So they're not residents, and so they're not viewed as being subject to the long arm of the U.S., except for those assets, of course, that are in the U.S. So if they have assets that are in the U.S., those assets are subject to estate tax. And the only exemption that they get is a $60,000 exemption, and that's a lifetime amount. Anything above that is subject to the estate tax. So if you have a $1 million apartment in one of the burgeoning towns in Brooklyn, or you have a $10 million apartment in South Beach or in Tribeca or in Dumbo or in Beverly Hills, the answer is that will be subject to estate tax on the passing of you in the U.S. It is essential to know that there are ways that you can get around that, and that is creating LLCs, which are not taxed as or S-corps, which are not taxed in the same way that it would be if it's subject to real estate. So before you make your purchases in the U.S. or you have friends that are making purchases in the U.S. and they're non-resident, non-citizens, it is essential to address that ownership entity in the form of a corporation that would be exempt because it's now intangible property versus real estate, which is considered tangible. Many folks who have tried to wash, quote-unquote, wash dirty cash by bringing it into the U.S. were purchasing real estate and creating LLCs, and then not and no one would know who the original owners are. Today, those LLCs, particularly, there's a good piece in the Times about 6 months or 8 months ago, maybe even a year, that addressed the issue that New York and Florida are requiring the owner behind the LLC come public when they are accepting the filings for the LLCs for real estate. Our clients are not in that category, but just know that the LLCs today require a greater disclosure than normal. We're not trying to avoid who the owners are, but just keep that in mind. Why should non-resident aliens consider life insurance? The essential piece that we want to highlight here is that life insurance, of course, has a number of uses for non-resident heirs. And, of course, the additional benefit is it avoids estate tax. The key piece here is that it can provide the liquidity that is critical to pay the tax that's due in the U.S. Plus, we would argue that the U.S. life companies are the best in the world. It is a way for U.S. For non-resident aliens to build assets compounding without any tax in the U.S. We love the strategy. And then, of course, it's not an asset that is subject to estate tax. We can thank the insurance lobbies a million years ago for continuing to fastidiously protect life policies for non-resident aliens. Of course, you have issues about qualifications, and properly the carriers are looking into your history and seeing if there's any nefarious reason to buy the policy. They're also looking at where you live. The underwriting process is more involved, but we believe is 100% worth the investment. Number eight, how can a wealth transfer plan mitigate anticipated estate tax on a non-resident alien? So non-resident aliens should strongly consider the use of protected trusts to hold assets which would otherwise be subject to U.S. real estate, including the idea of not just having the real estate owned alone, but owned inside of a vehicle such as an LLC or an S-corp. And the idea behind this is then transferring that into a trust, which can then avoid the U.S. estate tax altogether and keep those assets out of the estate of the U.S. beneficiary. So a non-resident alien can make that transfer into a trust for their children. We spoke about this earlier, or grandchildren, and enable those assets to be in this vehicle where they would compound without any estate tax drag for years later. One of the key things that we want to highlight is gifting by non-resident aliens to U.S. residents to be held inside of a trust. Number nine, what are the estate planning and estate administration implications of owning property located in a different nation? This is always the piece that catches the U.S. citizens who have a foreign history. Maybe their parents are still living overseas. Maybe they still retain assets overseas. Maybe they're receiving a gift because they are the sole remaining member. But do not be duped here. So every country has their own form of succession planning. And after the French Revolution, they made it clear that you could not just leave your assets to the oldest son or to skip your spouse, that it needed to be divided among the entirety of Generation 2 and the surviving spouse. So if you had a beautiful chateau in the Loire and you passed away with a $5 million estate, that estate would be divided among your spouse and your children. And so if the children are beneficiaries and you are a U.S. resident here, the spouse is exempt from a tax, provided the spouse is also a U.S. citizen, so there's no issue with the QDOT. But the children all are beneficiaries, and you have to file tax returns reflecting that the children have inherited this asset. Again, subject to significant penalties if you don't pick it up, because the U.S. government wants to know that the children are now owners of assets and they can start tracking them before they sell the chateau in overseas and avoid paying a gains tax, because they don't believe the U.S. government knows. And so the answer here is all these need to be reported and need to be known about. So first thing you must always do, and all of you on the call have already gone through this, but as you hear more and you speak with your friends, remind them that their foreign assets don't necessarily operate according to the way the will they've had here. So a wealthy U.S. resident leaves his or her assets to a surviving spouse in a trust, and all those assets are enjoying the U.S. exemption, marital deduction. But in France, the spouse doesn't get the chateau. The assets go to the spouse's children as well. And so under forced heirship, so those children now have to pay an estate tax and file. Please always tell your friends to check the jurisdiction where they have assets and understand what the rules are in that country that can override our rules in the U.S. There are certain things that have happened under the Hague Convention which allow you to have assets outside of France, for example, that wouldn't be subject to France's inheritance rules. And our will in the U.S., for example, could drive how those assets are distributed. But you need to pick through the issues and make sure that the foreign jurisdiction does not override what you have in the U.S. Essential pieces to know. Okay, number 10. What you need to know, what you must know before making a donation to a foreign charitable organization. And so the key piece here is that charitable organizations overseas, as a broad sweeping rule subject to many exceptions, is that gifts do not qualify for charitable deductions. But today, more and more, the exceptions are growing and growing, and U.S. foundations can make gifts to charities overseas. Frequently, it may be what we call an offshore U.S. entity that the gifts are made. In other instances, the charities are accepted in the U.S. because many gifts have been made to those foreign charities, and the U.S. government has done their homework on that charity and accepts it as a gift. Or it could simply be friends of. Those, as well as a well-established recipient, are ways that your foundations can make gifts overseas. But you must know that you need to research that charity. You need to know that we've accepted it. Some of the issues that help in accepting it on the U.S. standpoint as a valid charity is that there is that they follow more formal accounting rules. Those foundations, those charities overseas must also demonstrate their expenditure responsibility. There is no way around these issues. We would love to see you making gifts to the charities and supporting the types and kinds of outreach that match you. There are places, of course, around the world that need this more than ever, even if we're talking about rampant childbirth and mothers that are dying in childbirth, as one of our children is focusing significantly through her work at the UN. It is important to support those charities, but you need to know that your foundations, even more so. So, for example, we've written for years, written checks where to charities. My wife has said, I care less about the deduction. I care about supporting the mission of the charity. That's fine. But when it comes to your foundation, you must have 5% of the distribution supporting the charities that the U.S. government says are valid. So let us help you do the homework on those. Comply at least with the 5%. You can always make gifts beyond that from your foundation for charities that may not match the U.S.'s requirements, but that 5% must. And you must watch closely, especially with your foreign gifts with U.S. foundations. So with